Here in Kansas City, you have a lot of choices on your radio dial. We know not all of our listeners are in a monogamous relationship with KCUR 89.3 FM. Sometimes, for instance, I love to hear fellow community voices over on KKFI. Or things that make me go, wow, did he just say that? On Johnny Dare on 98.9 The Rock. Or classic rock. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we'll be joined by a local filmmaker who asked, what happened to the radio industry? Why and what is the cost to our communities as a result? KCUR's own Dan Verbeck is quoted in the film as saying the internet didn't kill commercial radio, it killed itself. Hear why on the next Central Standard. But first, the news. Good morning, Kansas City. One time, a baseball with written instructions came crashing through the window of a local radio station. The officer on the scene told the station owners that he couldn't be there to protect the property all the time. So what he suggested was that the radio station might want to change its format. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Corporate takeovers, consolidation, and ownership monopolies are the subject of Corporate FM, a new documentary which argues that the local voice has all but disappeared from your radio dial. And joining us now are two filmmakers behind that new documentary, Kevin McKinney and Jill McKeever. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Yeah.
What type of radio did you grow up listening to, Kevin, and what have you seen change from the standpoint of a listener?
Well, first of all, Jabalani, I want to thank you for having us on the air. What you do here with your show is something that inspires us to carry on what we're doing with this movie, and that is you're reaching out to a broader community. And that community, it has a chance to call in and actually listen to itself. So there is a conversation going on here with the entire city that makes this station alive, gives us soul.
Well, thank you very much for that. And that's the type of radio stations you grew up with, a community listening to itself.
Yes. As a high schooler, if I listened to KY102, there was a DJ that was out there in the community. They were listening to their community, and they were giving that community back to me. So I was connected. Even as a high schooler, I knew what was going on downtown. The station could have a promotion where they invited the entire city down for the Elvis parade, and we would all show up. That's crazy. You would never see that now.
That is crazy. Jill, is this the motivation that made you want to do the film as well?
Yeah, well, Kevin started telling me about this about 5 years ago, how he wanted to continue making this movie. And at first I was a little bit, I just didn't get it. I didn't understand why it was so important to bring commercial radio back. It's like, well, it's kind of just gone downhill. Why do we even need it? You know, we have internet and other things now, and you know, if I really want to get some new music, I'll find it. I'll dig around the internet, and you know. But after talking to him a lot, I finally realized just how important it is, and all the reasons why we do need it. And it's not extinct. It's not. It hasn't been replaced by internet. Nothing has replaced radio as a medium. So I really wanted to be a part of the project after that.
Yeah, she put it to me that when we lost hearing that local band lost us as a fan. So you might go see a really cool show with 30 other of your friends, but gone are the 200 extra people who are there just because a DJ introduced it to them.
Why did you call it Corporate FM?
Well, that was Jill came up with that title.
Jill, why did you call it Corporate FM? What made you come up with that title?
We had a lot of titles in the works, and we settled on Corporate FM, I think, just because of the irony. The logo kind of looks like it's a, you know, corporately owned rock station trying to look cool, even though it's obviously not. And just how, you know, pretty much how it's become. It's just Corporate FM. They can call it whatever they want. They try to call the station something different, but they're all the same.
And we'll talk about the uniformity of corporate radio broadcasting as it is today and what were the impetus that got it there. And that's sort of the main crux of the film, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking about the consolidation.
Right.
Okay, yeah. They've cut back because they no longer make their money by serving the listener. They now make their money by as a commodity to buy and sell the station. So it really doesn't matter if they have a DJ there or local programming.
And speaking of changes in local programming, we have our own local programming here on KCUR. Joining us now by phone is KCUR's own Dan Verbeck, who appears in the film and has worked in commercial news radio. Dan, how are you?
Good morning, Javelani and Jill and Kevin. I saw Kevin for about a half an hour, seems like a long, long time ago, as you were putting this together, and we talked and you had the camera there, and it was an alien experience for me. I usually interview people, but it was. I'm glad that you finally brought this. 5 years, you say, or more. I'm glad you were able to put it together to your satisfaction, Kevin.
And this was done over 7 years. We're hearing from Kevin here in the studio. Dan, speaking of alien experiences, Dan, where are you right now?
I'm by the VFW building on Broadway. There's a news event, I guess you could say, coming up at 10:30. Former advisor to the late President Ronald Reagan is coming to town to make an endorsement in the Missouri U.S. Senate race.
Now, how is the atmosphere on covering something like this different than other times, yesteryear, in radio?
Vastly different. Say, 20 years ago, there would have been reporters out here from, of course, there'll be the newspaper, there'll be the TV, but there would have been reporters from five or six radio stations, maybe. On these days, I can count on seeing one from a station where I once worked, and he's a great reporter, but he's kind of a lone voice. I think there are a couple of other reporters that work there, but when this consolidation came in, owners started buying stations and they bought the competition. If there were two or three, say, all news stations in town, at one point there were actually two in this town. And it required a lot of people, and the big expense in radio is having staff. It takes a lot of people to run an all-news station, 15, 20, 30 people, most of them reporters and producers. And so they'd buy the competition, and then you would put them together, and then you'd let half the people go. So, and then you would begin to whittle down because if you wanted to have that kind of programming to listen to, there was only one place to go. Likewise, if you worked at that place and they let you go, there really wasn't much, and still isn't, much else to go to. So you can leave town or try to find something somewhere else or go into public relations, which is what a lot of old reporters do who get canned.
Dan, notwithstanding the work you do here at KCUR, what are your thoughts on the market decrease of local news coverage and what it's done post-deregulation?
Well, it takes away the competition, and competition is what radio needs to thrive. If you're going to go out and cover a story, you want to have some other people there that you can, number one, beat to get the story on the air, to, you know, do it better, make it more interesting, get your facts. But, you know, make it interesting, and it takes away some of that that drive. It's just a natural thing. Who else are you going to beat? Well, you can take a little extra time to put it on the air.
Dan, we're here with Kevin McKinney and Jill McKeever, who are the filmmakers behind the new documentary Corporate FM. Kevin, what happened to news radio after the Telecommunications Act of 1996? That is the main crux of your film, the main turning point in what we've seen with local radio station. And I'll let Dan chime in after that. Tell us about the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
It's interesting that you say it's the main crux, because I think as a news guy, you glom on to the thing that matters to you, that speaks to your soul. And it is kind of scary to see a newsroom completely empty. The movie we cover music and how, without competition, there's no reason for a DJ to introduce something before the other station does it. So what Dan's talking about is...
It goes the same for news, right, Dan?
Sure. Sure it does. You got a corner on the market. You would think Sherman Antitrust would have come in here somewhere, but I would guess that the courts decided along the line that it's all okay.
As you pointed out in your film, Kevin, the former FCC chairman tend to go into private sector consulting with groups that do mergers and acquisitions in the telecom industry and broadcast industry. So part of that is why they might have gotten around any antitrust acts or considerations such as that.
We follow the money tree on the film, and I think we do it in such a entertaining way that those people in the boardrooms have to be spraying their coffee across the boardroom right now, wondering what they're going to do.
Like a spit take.
Like, yeah.
Dan, what is your solution based on your experience in radio? What is your solution? Do you deregulate the deregulation? What do you do?
I don't see any other way. What's the option? You've got to bring competition back, and there's got to be some way to compete with other stations. It's good for everybody. It's good on the public side, having some competition for news or whatever. Granted, not all public stations are the same, but public stations do something that the commercial side doesn't. Then again, they're serving different masters. Public is serving the community, and commercial is making money for the owners.
For the shareholders, certainly. Dan, your other colleague Steve Bell pointed out that when you have one or two viable news operations in a given market, that the operation can determine what not to report, and that can pose a problem. Talk about that and what your colleague Steve Bell said. And Kevin, you can come in after this. The same applies to DJs as well.
Right.
Dan?
Well, I've never had anybody tell me not to run a story. I was fired once for running a series on a pyramid scam that it turned out that my boss was heavily involved in and was making money off of. And so he said, it's not working out. Why don't you find some other place? But I've never been told cover a story this way. There's kind of an insidious manner in which some stations will the news director will decide, well, we're not going to cover that, but we'll cover this instead. So you could say there is some management of news.
Private equity and leveraged buyouts also appear as co-conspirators in this deregulation. Kevin, tell us about that, the private equity and leveraged buyout component of all the radio stations being scooped up.
Okay, and I want to just finish a little bit what Dan was talking about, competition. A lot of this movie is about how capitalism is broken. We don't talk about it so much in those terms, but for capitalism to work, you have to have competition. And that's what exited. What entered and took its place were these buyout firms, we'll call them private equity, leverage buyout firms, that made their money by placing debt on these stations. So now these stations have so much debt that they have to fire their employees. There's a station there. I know of one station in town that has one DJ that does the entire station. I think it's the 102 frequency here. I'm not sure what the call letter used to be, Star 102. Call in if I'm wrong, Star 102. So you have that one person who's doing their morning shift. They're voice tracking the next one, and then they're syndicating the rest. Do they have time to go out into the community? Do they have time to go to the bathroom? How could they go out to that new restaurant that no one's discovered and then jumpstart something for that restaurant or that local band or that local charity? We have a dead medium because of this.
Dan,
yeah, absolutely.
Do we have a dead medium?
You are absolutely right on that, and you have one person that that jumps around, and sometimes you have several stations, and they're doing say a newscast on one newscast, if you will, maybe a minute, and often it's happy talk stuff, and then as soon as that mic is off, you're throwing another switch, and you're doing another station, you're doing maybe the same thing, maybe something slightly different. And sometimes it could be on a whole raft of stations, one person, one voice. Sometimes they will actually call themselves by some other name on the other stations.
Dan, do you blame the Internet for the further fragmentation? You said that the Internet didn't kill corporate media. Corporate media itself was killing corporate media. I thought that was a very poignant thing to say. Can you elaborate?
have kind of self-immolation. And I don't think the internet, you know, the thing about radio is you get to, you are part of it. You take what you're hearing, but it's some of your imagination goes into it. It's an intimate thing. You have to be involved with it, and it allows you to, and it, you know, this doesn't have to be something like War of the Worlds or dramatic material, but when you hear some address mentioned, you have a concept, you know, what that looks like and what the smells are and the sounds there. Somebody else has a completely different concept of it, so it's an intimate thing.
Well, Dan, speaking of intimate things, you have to get intimately into the press conference you're there to cover and do what you do best for KCUR. Looking forward to hearing your report here on KCUR later. Thank you so much for joining us in a very poignant discussion.
Good to be with you, Jabalani. And Kevin and Jill, good luck on your venture.
Thanks.
Hope to see you at the premiere this Friday.
That was KCUR.
I would hope to be there Saturday.
That was KCUR's Dan Verbeek talking about the consolidation in local radio and how that changed news coverage and created a dearth of news coverage and, by larger extension, local programming. You are listening to FM radio right now, 89.3 FM to be exact, KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. And with us is someone who said that the FM frequency has become a city of abandoned competition. That's director Kevin McKinney, and along with producer Jill McKeever, the new film is called Corporate FM. What did you mean by that, Kevin? The FM frequency has become a city of abandoned competition.
Think of it as a city that you might want to visit for vacation, and there's fewer and fewer things to see there. Well, why go to that city? So, or a better analogy might be a shopping mall that has boarded up stores, and there's less reason to go to that shopping mall. These stations, since they own each other or they're owned by one group, they don't let them compete against themselves. In other words, you would not have a rock station and another rock station going head to head. Instead, you'd split it off. Make one a soft rock station and make one one for the kids. So you're dividing the population once again, taking the unity out of radio. It's what makes KCUR so wonderful is you have programming that appeals to grandma and the kids. You get everyone. That's broadcasting. What they're doing is narrowcasting.
That was very clever because you got broadcasting, and that's broad. And then you got narrowcasting, which narrows it down, makes it smaller, creates smaller segments, smaller bits. And Kansas City, in and of itself, is the epicenter for your film and is decidedly local. What make you want to focus on the KC market in particular to tell a larger story?
Money. That's all. I couldn't afford to go to L.A. or New York, although I had to use another market. I used San Diego in order to show that this, and Lawrence, Kansas, and Topeka, Kansas, in order to show that this is a national trend that's hurting all of us. And I needed to go someplace like San Diego that had a bigger scene.
Did you find, Jill, that looking at Kansas City was sort of endemic of the larger trend?
Yeah, the laser in Lawrence is particularly it used to be a huge station that was recognized nationally for being trendsetter for music. And they would pick up bands that no one knew about, some of them locals, some of them from other towns, and they would make them move from a local tiny stage to arenas. And some of those bands are still extremely, popular now, even, 20 years later. So they were known to be one of the best radio stations, and they had the flip formats, which didn't make them more money, but somehow it happened.
And a lot of people may remember what happened to the laser in Lawrence, and we're going to play a clip from the film rehashing what happened after the format change at KLZR. But could you share some information about what you know about that format change over at the laser before we get into this clip?
Yeah, they were very involved in the music community. So people, like farm kids way out in the sticks, would, someday I'm going to go to Lawrence and I'm going to go to a place called the Bottleneck and see a band. And it drove people to that city. It drove bands to that city that were nowhere from around here that knew if they came to Kansas City, or not to Lawrence, that the people in Lawrence, Kansas would sing along to their songs in a way that they would know the words. And that's one thing that's missing. And they went from playing local music to Whitney Houston overnight.
Literally overnight.
Yeah.
The first voice you'll hear in this clip is Jeff Peterson from KLZR The Laser, and then Sean Passmore, a.k.a. Chuck Taylor, who was a local music director and night DJ at KLZR. A little blast from the past right now.
They had actually told us this was going to happen and said it was going to be a slow evolution over several months. And it was just boom, just like that. Came to work on Monday and it was everything that we used to play was gone. And that's why all of a sudden it started being Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears, and I was shocked. I'm really thinking to myself, okay, well, I'm going to start looking for a new job.
So it was about 3 or 4 in the morning, and all of a sudden the window crashed and glass was flying through the blinds, and a officer came and filed the report, looked the window, went outside, they found a baseball that had some cryptic message written on it about making changes for stupid reasons and it's a horrible idea, and asked the officer what we could do to keep this down, and he said, well, I can't really sit out there all the time because as soon as I leave they're gonna come back, but the only advice I can give you is change your format back.
That's Jeff Peterson and Sean Passmore both talking about the format change at KLZR that happened in the wake of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and the resulting consolidation and disappearance of local content, local character, and local programming for the most part in a lot of the country's local radio stations. And Kansas City was no different. And Kansas City is the epicenter for Corporate FM, a new documentary. The filmmakers are here live in the studio, Kevin McKinney and Jill McKeever. How has this climate, Kevin, contributed to a dearth in local programming?
First of all, before I go on to that, I have to say that the people who sold the station, the Booth family, they are still wonderful people. They did wonderful things for the community, and they took the money that they made off that sale and they put it into like athletic programs and stuff. So this movie is not about pointing a finger at all the local people who kind of went along with the change and saying, hey, you're a villain. No, we get down to the nitty-gritty, and we say we want to find out why and the why behind the why, so this doesn't have to happen.
And speaking of the dearth in local programming, you may have noticed some dropouts in our radio transmission here. We're sorry about that. They're being caused by transmitter problems, and we're working on it. The entire show, though, will be preserved on our website at kcur.org for uninterrupted listening. We recommend streaming on our website at kcur.org right now. Very ironic that we're talking about changes in radio and the corporate takeover in radio and the local voices dropping off, and we have technical difficulties. But callers, this is not a right-wing conspiracy at all.
We hope not.
So tell us more about the role of how a company or private equity firm or holding company or large media conglomerate can come in and essentially squelch local competition and take away the entire local character.
So you buy a station and you buy another station that's just like it, and you can merge the two, which means you get less and less staff. Jill, do you want to jump in on any of this?
Yeah, sure. It kind of comes down to, technology allows you to run as many stations as you want from one booth, and the Telecommunications Act allowed people to buy up as many stations as they want to do that. So they just had someone in a corporate office somewhere doing everything at once, and you're not going to have local programming if you're a national company and all of your local stations across the United States, where you own hundreds or thousands. If you're going to cut costs because you put your business in so much debt when you have purchased it, that's kind of what happens. They just get rid of all the staff to pay off all that debt. And pretty soon, of course, there's no local programming. They have no choice.
And if you're a startup and you want to compete with that corporation, you can't, because the barriers for entry are so high. So that's how they control the market. You might not own every stinking frequency on that dial, but you own enough to set the terms for what things cost. You set the terms for the rest of the market. And that's what makes it a monopoly. They have monopoly power, even though they don't own every frequency. They don't own this frequency.
And, Kevin, the key sticking point here is that in many cases, the buyers of these radio stations aren't radio people.
Yeah. Yeah. Just think about if your boss here at KCUR, Patty Cahill, went from, you know, having a radio person to someone who was a banker who just looked at numbers. And that's why the music, in many cases, sucks, is because they're going by the numbers. The numbers make sense.
And the numbers are what has been successful in the past, so it's a closed loop, and they just keep playing the same things over and over because they are too afraid to take a risk and try something new. And the whole point of, you know, really getting new fans and people engaged is that they're seeing something new.
And the person who took that risk before was the local guy who was playing music from his gut, from his heart.
Kevin McKinney and Jill McKeever are the filmmakers behind the new locally produced documentary, Corporate FM. Corporate FM is opening at the Kansas City Film Fest on Friday, April 13th, and will be shown on Saturday, April 14th as well. The Friday screening is at AMC Downtown, and the Saturday screening is at the AMC Ward Parkway. There will be a Q&A discussion after each showing. For more info, go to our website on kcur.org. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we hear about some of the local DJs who became casualties of corporate consolidation and how corporate radio has affected the news business. And we want to hear from you. Do you remember the day Laser changed its formats, or any of your local stations changed their formats or became less local? And how have your own radio listening habits changed in the past decade? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We want to hear from you on what radio you like. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We return now with our guest who believes that the sociological impact of radio for local communities is more powerful than the internet or any other technology, but that power has been threatened by deregulation and the increased influence of corporate radio. That guest is Kevin McKinney, and joining him is Jill McKeever. They're both filmmakers of a new film called Corporate FM, which is premiering this weekend here in Kansas City at both the AMC Downtown and the AMC Ward Parkway. Kevin, what have the changes in commercial radio meant for local music?
You know, one thing I really miss, I went out to see this band called Run on Sentence a couple weeks ago. And the guy, he's from Kansas City, but I'd never heard him before. I'm at the Brick, and I'm in the front row. I'm actually the only one standing, and he is awesome. I mean, I feel like I'm in the presence of Jim Morrison before anyone knows him. And I'm thinking, well, there's 30 people in here and we're all pretty cool, but where's the rest of us? Where's this band going to go, Run on Sentence? Who's going to know them besides the 30 core fans in every city they go to? I'm sure they have this following of internet followers that go out. But what we're missing is the unity. We used to sing together, and that doesn't happen. It still happens, but it's isolated.
Yeah, the film talks specifically about the Rainmakers, a local Kansas City band, being discovered in Kansas City, the Ramones, a local New York band, being discovered in New York, and how are local artists discovered now, if at all, with the influx of corporate radio?
KY-102 used to put out albums of local music, and so it was in their best interest to kind of hawk that album for two reasons. One, they had a bunch of albums, too. It made them look really cool if that band took off and went to the rest of the nation, which happened with Shooting Star and the Rainmakers.
A perfect example of this is how Jewel rose to prominence and rose to popularity out of a small radio station in San Diego. Talk about that.
Jewel was homeless and playing, you know, coffee shops and streets and whatever, and a DJ, one of the DJ's friends, sees her, and he says, hey, come on in the studio. We'll record a demo tape. And then he plays that demo tape on the air. It's not a matter of just playing it once on his show. He, in his terms, bangs the crap out of it. He plays it as much as he can. I know your listeners probably were like, well, hey, we hate repetition. We all hate a lot of repetition, but you need a certain amount of repetition to where you know what something is.
Anytime there's something new, you need a little bit of repetition, or most people do, to make the patterns in their head start to recognize it as something they like. Otherwise, it's really hard to know if you like it until you've kind of been introduced to it a few times, even if it's involuntarily.
So Jewel becomes a star in her own town of San Diego, where she is.
And speaking of San Diego, we're going to hear from Michael Halloran explaining the format change. He is credited for breaking Jewel, as well as Blink 182 and several other artists, and known for introducing that city to its own emerging talent. And he talks about the changes and how they affect modern radio. Let's hear that right now.
So when Tim Dukes came in, the representative from Cincinnati, they were going to dictate their style upon San Diego. He was just looking at a Billboard chart that was in front of him, and he was asking me, you know, well, why aren't you playing the Nixons? Why are you playing reggae on an alternative rock station? And why are you playing, Jewel? You know, Jewel is, you know, she's a folk artist. Jewel at that point had sold 15,000 copies of her album, her first album in San Diego. And this is before anybody in the country had heard about her. I said, Tim, we don't play the chart. We actually make the chart. We're the architects that build the chart. Whatever the chart is what we're doing. So if we're going to play the chart, it's the backwards way of thinking. So the chart was a thermometer of what we were doing. The barometer was whatever was coming into the station that we wanted to play. Like if a band like the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy came out and we're like, wow, this is really great, and we played it, that would eventually affect the chart. So the chart would go up or down depending on what we did. So the chart was always the thermometer, but you never used it as a barometer, because if you do that, then you constantly play the same crap over and over again, and then it becomes boring, and then people tune out because they've already heard it before.
And that's a clip from the new film Corporate FM. Mike Halloran, a DJ, explaining the format changes he experienced in San Diego after the Telecom Act, and talking about the result, in which the same crap is played over and over again and it becomes boring and people tune out because they've heard it before. Kevin, have people tuned out of the actual conversation about local choice in radio? Have they become desensitized?
It's kind of like being desensitized to being put on hold by the phone company. People just kind of accept it now, because every year corporate radio's gotten a little worse, every year, little by little. And slowly this thing has died. Whereas it wasn't like in 96, we saw a lot of sudden change, but since then it slowly got worse and worse. I mean, we lost the night DJs, all of them, pretty much about 8 years ago. That is where the emerging talent came. The future of radio died 8 years ago when they got rid of the night DJs, because the future of the radio is people like you who get their start cutting their chops in the middle of the night.
That's a lot of pressure with me cutting my chops here in the middle of the night. But talk about that. After 7, most commercial radio stations, as you pointed out in the film, are completely dark.
Yeah, in the movie, it feels like you're in the Titanic. And that I get that analogy from one of the technicians who was telling me that it felt like being in the Titanic, because everything was dead. But you could tell there used to be life there, and he wanted that life back. So we tried to do that as good we could, as we could in the movie.
Jill, talk about voice tracking and how the advent of automation has changed the way radio programming is presented to the public.
Well, it's all just automated, and there's no interaction with people. Part of what makes radio so engaging is the fact that you know there's someone there in the booth wanting to talk to you and wanting to play the song that you really want to hear, or dedicate it to someone you really like. Or, you know, there's all kinds of local conversation going on, and you feel like you're a part of it. And once you're not a part of it anymore, it's kind of like, oh, it's just being programmed towards me. And, you know, well, I'm not going to listen to it then, you know. And that's what voice tracking is it takes the audience out of the equation.
Kansas City speaking of bringing the audience into the equation, we're having a conversation about Corporate FM, the new film about consolidation in radio, broadcasting in particular, but radio specifically. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We'd like to hear your thoughts on format changes. While you might not be privy to all of the high-level aspects of consolidation and telecom acts and regulation and deregulation and leverage buyouts and private equity, you do know that your format changed, and you may or may not like that. So we'd like you to chime in on how things have changed for your radio listening habits over the years. 816-235-2888. Once again, that number is 816-235-2888. We're going to go to Ed in KC. Ed, welcome to Central Standard.
You guys are making me really nostalgic today. And what I was remembering in Kansas City specifically when KY102 in 1994 lost Max Tanna and Moffat, Max Floyd and Tanna Guthrie and Larry Moffat, and it was just really, really sudden. And then they switched their frequency over to, I think, 99.7, and the three of them were able to come back together again. But they were the classic morning drive group. And I remember my wife and I owned a small meat processing plant, and they did a promotion one time, Punkin' Chunkin', where we supplied jerky. And these guys got 500 or 600 people out early morning at the old Lakeside Speedway. And we chunked pumpkins for an hour on the radio. And you just don't, that sort of thing just doesn't happen anymore. I worked briefly for KSTP up in Minneapolis back in the late 60s. And I remember we had, for our overnight programming, even that long ago, we had big reels of tape that we put on huge Ampex tape recorders. And we had two or three different overnights where there was nobody in the station other than the lead engineer. And that just seemed so sterile. What you guys were just saying about when the DJ leaves the room basically goes dark. So, yeah, I miss what we used to have, I guess.
Thank you, Ed, for your comments. He gets a little nostalgic about KY102 and his experiences there. Speaking of which, a famous radio personality, locally famous, a local celebrity, The Slacker, appears in your film, a host and talk personality, shock jock, if you will, on KY102. Almost 20 years on the job. What happens to him?
First of all, Ed, I wanted to say what you used to experience was the radio station having a relationship with you as an advertiser, and it made it cool for the listener. That's a connection, and that's the way radio used to grow local business. So if you're concerned about the local economy faltering, one of the culprits is Corporate FM. So Slacker, he is one of those people like Max, Tanna, and Moffat, who was younger than them, who is up and coming in the business. I talked to him instead of Max, Tanna, and Moffat for several reasons. One, Tanna's working. I don't want to, you know, jeopardize, you know, I don't want to make her out of her comfort zone because you don't really want to bite the hand that feeds you. Slacker today is working on at Cumulus here in Kansas City at the rock station. What is it called? The Fox. And I'm sorry, I totally lost your question.
But he was let go after 15 years.
He was let go from KY. He did rejoin a different station. But he definitely lost his ability to play what he wanted. He was forced to play songs that he didn't want to play. And he kind of saw his job go from fun to not fun at all. And my guess is that, you know, it hasn't really changed very much since then. No matter what station you hop to afterwards, if you can get a job in radio anymore, it's not going to go back to being fun again, because you're not really in charge of your own show and you're not really able to do what you want to do. And that was the beauty of, you know, local radio DJs, that they really knew what they were doing and they were curators and they were trying to start new movements and engage people and have a community presence.
And he also mentioned that perhaps a younger person wouldn't be able to do what he'd done for so many years ever again because of the modern status quo of commercial radio.
It's not that you know, Slacker could still program a great radio station. It's just that the owner no longer is local. So the owner has no interest in him programming a great radio station. They're just looking at the numbers from out of town. And the numbers do not have the future on them. They only reflect the past.
You're listening to FM radio right now. We're talking about the film Corporate FM. You're listening to 89.3 FM, to be exact. KCUR streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. The show is Central Standard. And we have filmmakers, Kevin McKinney and Jill McCleaver, talking about the new film Corporate FM, how commercial radio has helped or hurt radio stations. We have Jason in Overland Park now. Talk to us.
Hi, guys. I'm an old FM jock from Kansas City from mid-90s. I've been doing radio since I was 13 years old, started in mid-Missouri. In fact, the way I got started, you know, you can't do that anymore because I was a caller the DJs put on and managed to talk my way into a part-time job doing weekend overnight, the shift that doesn't exist anymore. Move that up into overnight, the shift that doesn't exist anymore because it's all just computers now. But, you know, I was actually on the air talking about formats. My first job out of college was at 107.3 The X here in Kansas City, the alternative station. And January 4th, 1999, they decided to change the format. The ownership out of town decided that this new rhythmic oldies was going to be the way to go. My general manager came down and told me to produce up a bunch of sound effects with explosions and play it right at 9 a.m. And talk about, you know, how great the new place was going to be. So, I played one last record and came on the air, did live Legal ID, and I just said, boom, and started the new music. I didn't want a big fanfare. I was sad, and he was kind of upset with me, but that's the way it happened. My favorite format change ever, though, I was a part-timer in Des Moines, Iowa, in college, and I was playing the Rick D's Countdown one morning, and a bunch of people I'd never seen before came in, and it turned out that they worked for the a station in Des Moines that was owned, in Milwaukee that was owned by the same people, and they started pulling all the signs off the wall, and a guy came in with a big empty box and started flipping all the tapes off the racks and the wall on the wall that had all the music in them and putting them into this empty box, and another guy came in with a new box full of tapes and started putting them up with the new songs, and I kept asking people what was going on, and I couldn't get anybody to talk to me, And finally, I snagged somebody, and they said, well, who are you? And I said, well, my name's Jason. And they said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a weekend part-timer. They said, you're fine. You and the engineer will be the only people that work here on Monday. I was like, okay. That was big fun. And, now my job that I love, working on FM radio, doesn't exist anymore. So I'm at a locally owned AM radio station doing sports talk, and I do a bunch of the behind-the-scenes. And you were talking about the relationship with the advertisers, and I think that's super important, the relationship with the listeners, and I've found that locally owned sports talk is the only way I can get that.
Wow. Jason, a local sports talk personality who was a radio DJ, gives us a firsthand account here of an actual corporate takeover where they're literally coming in, throwing tapes in the boxes, and firing everybody. That was pretty much the quintessential modus operandi.
It happened everywhere. And sports radio is like the last standing one because it's hard for a corporation to pretend to be Kansas City Chiefs fans when they're in Milwaukee.
Right.
So they actually have to hire someone local to do that. So they don't want to hire people local. So it's a really good opportunity for a local radio operator to stand up and really serve their market.
You wrote on your recent blog, Kevin, that some community and public radio people are happy that commercial radio sucks. I know maybe some of our listeners might not even listen to commercial radio. The reason that bland corporate programming drives listeners over to NPR stations and community stations such as KKFI, but you say they couldn't be more wrong.
Yeah.
Why do you think they're wrong?
When the whole medium is suffering, think about college students today. They were never around when radio used to serve them, when commercial radio used to serve them. So even turning on a radio itself, I mean, why would you do that? Why would you turn on a radio when most of the stuff on it is prepackaged? So when I talk to younger people, I have to explain to them that, no, radio used to be something that was vibrant. So when the whole medium goes down, that hurts NPR because there are less people who are finding your station out of curiosity. And when people tune away from NPR, let's say you're listening to the Garrison Keillor show and you don't like the Powder Milk Biscuit song, I always tune away, right? But then I tune right back. But what if I tune away and there's nothing else on? Well, I might turn the thing off and or, you know, maybe turn on a, put on a CD or something, or
go to my
MP3 player. So I've left the medium.
And the other way around, you could gain new listeners from a different station that, you know, maybe someone's just surfing through because there's a lot going on and they find you that way after listening to music on a corporate station or a commercial station. But for the most part, it's just, yeah, it doesn't happen. It's just like with TV. You wouldn't really turn on TV very much if there were only two stations.
We're talking about how corporate radio has changed the radio landscape here and sort of squelched out local voices. But speaking of local voices, we have one on the line right now. Jose Faust, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Great. This conversation brings me back to something I remember years ago that was a really informative thing for me. I used to, most of the music I listened was my friends would turn me on to it, and we'd listen in stereos and stuff. But I remember one time there was a song, DOA, and I called in a DJ, he had an open line, and it was a guy named Captain Diablo, but that was his handle, and I said, hey, dude, can you play DOA? And that time they were playing it all over the place. It was trashy. And he said, man, let me turn you on to something else. I think you'll like it. And that was the first time I heard Pink Floyd. And he literally just played the side, just took the whole album through it. And I remember over the years, you could call these guys up and talk to them, and they, you know, even if they couldn't get your song on, they'd have time in between, and you could talk to them. They'd tell you about music. I mean, they were your teachers as far as, like, new music coming out and everything. And when that went away, when that relationship went, I found myself just drifting away. But in a good way, I ended up at NPR. So, yeah, it was kind of a sad thing to watch the demise of that relationship.
Thank you, Jose. Very interesting thing. The album format completely gone. The interactive component of the DJ talking to the listener or taking requests, mostly gone. Talk about that.
I have an 11-year-old, and he's so curious. He listens to commercial radio, but pretty soon he's going to drop off because he's going to want it to interact back with him. When I was his age, we could call up the station and dedicate a song to another girl in the school. That's how we went out with each other, is, you know, so-and-so dedicated a song to you. That connection is gone.
Yeah, kids as well as everyone else are so wanting to connect with everyone else, especially with people in their own community, their peers. And I think internet's the only way they can do that anymore. And radio is actually a stronger way of doing that if it's used right. But there's no way of doing that right now. But it used to be that radio would have been a way more fun and it's a stronger way of connecting with the rest of your community.
And meanwhile, how has the advent of Pandora, satellite, and digital radio, as well as iPods, changed the way we tune into what we'd like? You mentioned it briefly in the film a couple of times, but can you expound further on the new listening options and how that might affect commercial radio?
So what Jill's talking about, the radio being a more powerful way to connect with your community, can't be replaced by satellite radio or the internet because those don't specialize on your community. They're not concentrating your community, and your entire community, the old people and the young people, the poor people, do not have satellite radio. I can't get my internet to work half the time. I could rail on that, but I want to let listeners know that we want to take this message on the road, and we will be launching a Kickstarter from our website at fmfilm.com.
And yeah, and more about the different devices and the different websites and everything. There's a lot that you can find through Pandora. There's a lot you can find through satellite radio. But the whole point is that you're not listening to it at the same time as other people that are around you, and you're not connecting with your community, and it's not local. The whole point of radio is that it's local, and that's an internet just kind of finds spots all over the globe, and you might connect with someone on the other side of the globe, but that doesn't do the same thing as when you're connecting with someone locally, and we've kind of lost that.
And that's the key. You don't get to run down the street and say, turn on your radio.
Yeah,
listen to your radio. Turn on your radio right now. guess who's on.
You don't get to sing with your neighbor. You don't get to, when you see them across the way in their car and they're going, blah, 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 singing along with a song, you can't turn to that same song and start singing along with them. You don't dance to the same song.
You're not going to see the same bands. You're not going to go to the same business like the caller was talking about, where you're just like rushing to a place because the radio is like, hey, this is going on down the street. Come on down. You know, that doesn't happen on the internet.
So you talk about bringing radio back as a solution. How do you see it happening, if at all, as we close this conversation out here?
Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen one of several ways. Either we go back and we dial back the Telecommunications Act of 1996, or we go back the financial route and we don't allow these companies to make profit off of firing people. And the way they can make profit off of firing people is they write off their debt. So, you know, you and I write off our debt on our houses. If you own a house, you understand what I'm saying. But I'm not saying get rid of that. I'm saying get rid of tax deductibility for corporate buyouts. Don't let the government pay people to get pay these companies to fire people.
And yeah, the radio industry is just an example. It's happened in a lot of other industries, but radio got hit really hard.
It's a change that needs to happen.
Kevin McKinney and Jill McKeever are the filmmakers behind a new locally produced documentary called Corporate FM. It's about consolidation and how it has caused the dearth of local programming. Corporate FM is opening in Kansas City at the Kansas City Film Fest on Friday, April 13th, as well as Saturday, April 14th. The Friday screening is at the AMC Downtown, and the Saturday screening is at AMC Ward Parkway. There will be a Q&A session after each showing. For more info on Corporate FM and this show in particular, and a replay of the podcast, go to our website at kcur.org. Kevin and Jill, thank you for joining us today on today's program. And tune in tomorrow for a look at the only Mormon temple to open in North America this year, right here in Independence. Our show is produced by Andreas Lindsay with help from Charlie Upchurch and Dan Verbeck. Up to Date is next with a discussion on healthcare for pets. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and this is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.